Page 120 of The Unfolding is the story of Leah Cadwell.
There was no one we could call. I ended up driving myself to the hospital. It was a horrible time. There was no one to come watch our kids. There was no one to help drive me to the hospital because we hadn't built relationships.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When Leah Cadwell was a young newlywed, she and her husband heard a clear call from God to move to India. They had dreams of working and serving and making a real difference in the lives of the people that they'd grown to love. After 20 years in the country, Leah and her family were forced to leave. The circumstances could have crushed her spirit, but God had used her time there not only to bless the people she worked with, but he had also used it to change Leah.
You know, I've become known as the India girl because I spent so much of my life now, my adult life in India. I lived for 20 years in that wonderful country. People often forget that that's not where my life started. And a lot of my life before India really made sense that I ended up in India because I grew up in a lovely Christian home. I had very loving Christian parents who took me to church, who filled our house with food and sports. We grew up in the Detroit area, which is a very sports-loving city. We loved our Detroit Tigers baseball. We even had the seats from the stadium when they tore the old stadium down.
Oh, wow.
They were in our backyard, and we would sit in them with great joy. You know, we suffered through all the seasons of the Detroit Lions football team, loss after loss after loss, but we still loved them. I participated in sports. I learned a lot of resilience from both winning and losing in sporting events. We had a lot of young friends around, and life was very good. We had a good childhood, a good upbringing. My parents did get divorced quite early in my childhood, but that didn't seem to alter my childhood at all. We spent a lot of time with both my mom and my dad, and their love for us was always secure and strong. And that really built into my life a security that allowed me to do whatever I wanted to do. I had confidence in knowing that both God and my parents were always there, and they were going to help me achieve whatever I wanted to achieve.
Did you have a sense early on that you might live internationally? Or what did you think you were going to do when you were a kid?
I didn't really know. You know, I thought maybe I'd be a teacher because I loved my teachers and I wanted to do what they did. I did have a sense that I would be involved in ministry of some sort because I loved God so much and I loved the church so much. And I couldn't imagine my life without the church. Even though I didn't have, you know, aspirations of living overseas and I didn't even think about India at all because, you know, we were not one of those families that went out for ethnic food all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, McDonald's was our staple. And so I didn't have that kind of experience. But God had woven his love for people into my heart. At a very early age, I knew that I think ministry to people was something that was going to be very important. From a very early age then, I was involved in ministry. You know, I was always at VBS or at choir practice or in Sunday school. And as I got older then, I was involved in leading Bible studies for young people. And as I grew into a young adult, then I was leading Bible studies for young women and involved in the singles ministry. And then eventually it came time to maybe take my first overseas trip. And it was a very easy one. We went to the island nation of Dominica, which, you know, is basically like an island vacation. I think we built a church building, but it wasn't that hard, you know. And we came back from there and I thought, oh, this is, you know, this is what I think I want to do, but that didn't really capture my heart. But I did know that ministry was what I wanted to do, but I didn't know vocationally how that was going to work out. I was driven definitely, though, to a lifelong commitment to the Lord and whatever he had for me.
Did you study? What did you do in college?
Mm-hmm. I was a marketing major.
Oh, okay.
And so I didn't know how God was going to use it quite then, mm-hmm. but God knew. God was preparing me. He was just waiting for me to pull that trigger and go to the nation that he knew that I would end up in. And that happened back in 1995, 1996, when I first took our first short-term trip to India. My husband and I had been married just for 2 months. And we went there for about 3.5 weeks or so. And from the moment that we touched our feet into India, we knew that this was something special. It was very interesting because there were strange smells that we weren't used to, and the food was something we were not used to, and it was very hot, and the electricity was unreliable, and we had to draw our water from a well, and everything was inconvenient in the place that we were staying. But the people were so wonderful. They were capturing our hearts from day one. And I can remember 2 days into it, my husband and I came back together after the day of work that we had done. And we looked at each other and we said, this is where we're going to spend the next major portion of our lives. We both heard God calling us. We didn't know exactly what that meant. We didn't know exactly what we would do. But we heard the call of God clear and just crystal clear. And it was such an amazing moment for both of us because we had received that call separately, mm-hmm. you know, during the day. Mm-hmm. And it was something that we couldn't deny. And we were so excited just to share that with one another as a newlywed couple. You know, we went back to the U.S. and we started sharing this with people. And, you know, we kind of thought, oh, no, people are going to think that we're crazy, you know, moving across the world to India. Is that what you really want to do? But that's not the response that we got. The response that we got when we said we want to move to India, people said, well, of course you want to move to India. And we said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, it makes perfect sense. You've dedicated your lives to the church. You've dedicated your lives to ministry. This is the next natural step. Of course you're going to go. And we just garnered the response, or the support of all the different people that we talked to. And it only took us 4 months to put everything together. And then we were moved into our new house in India.
4 months?
Yeah, 4 months. It was so fast.
So you were connected with a ministry? Did you have, what were you planning to do once you were in country?
Yeah, we thought we were going to do youth ministry when we were there.
Okay.
We were wrong, but but that's what we thought we were going to do. And we had planned to do that. We wanted to do something different. We were a part of this new paradigm where foreigners were going to come in and be the servants. We're going to be under the leadership of the Indian national workers. And we were really excited about doing that. And let me just tell you, they taught us so much and we were very excited about that. But even though everyone was very excited about us going there and they were thinking, oh, it's going to be a honeymoon for you and it's going to be such a wonderful experience, amazing, so fantastic. We got there and it was really hard. Because right off the airplane on day one, we were met with so many cultural difficulties. Because I tell you, the culture of India is wonderful, but it's also so different from our own American culture that we had so much to learn. And if we had not stopped to ask questions, if we had not taken the position of a learner, we would have been very disappointed and very
frustrated.
Frustrated, absolutely.
That's what kind of things did you run into?
And I think the first thing that we really ran into was the difference between how they view time versus how they view relationships. And this really came into play even in the first week that we were in India, because we were all ready to go shopping for things to furnish our house and we were excited about meeting new people. And we would wait for our ride to come to take us to the store to buy a fridge. And we would wait and wait and wait, and they wouldn't come because they were doing something else. And we thought we had agreed to meet at 9 o'clock, but 10:30 came and well, there comes our Jeep to pick us up and take us to the store. And, you know, why were they late? Oh, well, I had to meet my mother and take care of something for her. And, you know, it didn't make sense to us, but it made perfect sense to our Indian friend because the relationship with his mother came first. And while we valued time more highly, they valued relationships more highly. And that was something that we had to get used to. The other thing that was very interesting to us was the value that our Indian friends placed on hospitality. And it made us feel very uncomfortable at times because the Indian people love to be hospitable. They love to give of themselves so much that we thought it might hurt them even.
Oh.
You know, we would go into someone's house, and the general way that the Indians would eat a meal was that the guests would eat first. And then maybe the men of the family would eat, and then maybe the children would eat, and then the women would eat last. And that's just how it went, and that was very normal for their culture. But we were very uncomfortable because, you know, we thought, are we eating all of your food? And they would keep putting more and more food on our plate, and it was delicious, and we wanted to eat more, but we thought, will the women eventually have anything to eat? But the women didn't mind. The women valued us as their guest above everything, and that's what was most comfortable for them. Giving to us out of hospitality was so important for them. We were confronted with all of these worldviews that were so different from our own that we were uncomfortable, we were frustrated, we didn't know what was going on, but at the same time, we were learning to build relationships, which were the most important thing. And we were learning to stop and ask questions. And that was what was really important to us.
Was there a point along the way where you thought, oh, we're bailing? This is not going to work? It's totally not what I thought I was going to do?
You know, I get asked that question quite often. And there really wasn't.
Oh.
Because our call to India was so strong from the Lord that we really believe the Lord equipped us with some sort of supernatural tolerance.
Resilience.
Resilience, tolerance to see what he wanted us to see in the people. And I come back to the issue of relationships all the time because the people were what kept us there. And that was something that we wanted so desperately to develop, were these relationships with people. And that was something else that was really hard for us. My husband is a natural at developing relationships. I mean, he can talk to anyone about anything for any amount of time. And I love that because that means, guess what? I don't have to. And I know there are probably people out there who relate to that because we've got a lot of introverts in this world who don't like to talk to people. I mean, it's just out of our comfort zone. And so I allowed him to do that. And so he would build the relationships. And guess what? That meant that I didn't have the relationships. And for quite a long time, I really struggled with relationships. God had put me in the midst of this wonderful country that was focused on relationships, that valued relationships above almost anything else. And here I was, unable to build relationships because of some of my own flaws, because of some of the things that I held dear to myself. I really waited for people to become my friend. I would sit back. I would be passive. I was never intentional with people. One of the things in India that is very common is that people will just drop by your house unannounced. You know, if that happens here in the U.S., we would freak out. We would be, you know, oh no, my house isn't clean, or you know, my dog is going crazy, or I'm not wearing the right clothes. You know, we don't like people to drop by unannounced. At least text me or call me or something like that. But in India, people love to do that because, again, the relationship comes first. And so people will drop by, they'll bring you food, they'll just come by to chat or whatever. But because we were Americans, our new Indian friends knew that we had a little bit of cultural bias against that. And so they didn't tend to drop by unannounced at our house. But we were perfectly welcome to drop by their house unannounced. But we didn't, because I was not taking the initiative to drop by their house unannounced. And so then that perpetuated the problem. If I had dropped by their house unannounced, they would have definitely reciprocated. And that relationship could have grown and grown into a friendly thing that would have grown into the future. And I reflect back on this time with great sorrow because my lack of ability to build relationships really came to a head when we faced a health crisis when we were there. We had two beautiful children that were born in India, Clark and Claire, and they're today great young adults, and we love them so much. But 5 years after our second child was born, I became pregnant again with twins.
Oh, wow.
And we were thrilled. But then the day came when, you know, I had some bleeding and had to go to the hospital, and there was no one to come watch our kids. There was no one to help drive me to the hospital because we hadn't built relationships. There was no one we could call. And I ended up driving myself to the hospital. It was a horrible time. We reflect back on that time with great sorrow because that's what you want in life. You need people who are there in the good times, but also in the times of great tragedy and in great times of great sorrow. And yes, I had a miscarriage. Yes, we got through it. You know, there were a few people who came to pray for us afterwards, but there was no one we could call in our time of need. And I think it was that lowest point of time when we decided we have to make a change. We have to learn what it's going to take for us to build relationships. God has placed us here in this nation of relationships with great intention. And so we did. We made a big change, and we started to change the way we viewed people. We started to pursue people. And when we started to pursue people, we realized that when you pursue people, they respond relationally. And our number of friendships grew. And from that point, things changed, and we were so thankful.
How long had you been in country when the miscarriage happened?
Yeah, we had been there a long time, which is the unfortunate thing, because we had been there about 10 years. And so it was 10 years of, dare I say, wasted time. Of course, nothing is really wasted with the Lord, right? But it was 10 years where we could have been making deep, deep friendships. And we feel very sorry about that.
Leah and her husband had gone to India to help people, but God was using India to help Leah. Part two of her story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute.
Hi, I'm Habib Habib, and this is your Inspirational Minute. John was a doctor. A couple of days before he died, John told people it was time to go to hospice care, where he died 3 days later. He had left a message. Please don't send flowers or be sad for me. I had a great life. Instead, give yourself the gift of having joy in life. Have a cookout. Fly a kite with your child. Forgive yourself for actions that happened in the past and move on. Live your life and love without fear of being hurt. Look for the good. Donate your time for a good cause. Look to make things a little better everywhere you go. Don't waste time. The number one complaint I saw in my medical practice was not disease, it was loneliness. Don't fall into the trap of thinking you have time to spare. Laugh more and worry less. If you want to remember me well, do a kind thing today. Smile for a stranger or be patient with someone struggling with their day. When I read that note, I thought, what great advice from the doctor. I don't know if he was a Christian or not, but his advice sounds like biblical advice. Don't waste your days. Instead, do good unto others and have the joy of the Lord. I'm Habib Habib. You can read more at HabibHabib.com.
And now part two of Leah Cadwell's story. So how did your life change? Yeah. Obviously, that was outside your comfort zone.
Right. Well, I tell you, God put some people in our lives that really helped us. And Sunil and Sunita were some people that we met, a dear Indian couple. They themselves had been married quite a few years when we first got there, maybe 5 or 6 years. And they had hoped to have a child of their own, but they didn't. And they still don't today. They've been married decades now. But instead of putting their effort into a child and just, you know, having sorrow over the fact, they decided to pour their lives into other people. And so, you know, they were the ones who taught us so much about hospitality, about relationship, about pursuing relationships. And I can still remember them, you know, taking us into the markets and negotiating prices for us and taking us for dinners and introducing us to all of the Indian foods that we like. And then also, you know, when our baby was born, our firstborn son, they were the ones that came to the hospital to bring us food in the hospital. You know, they were the ones who pursued us. And still today, every time my son's birthday comes around, there comes a Facebook message, you know, oh, we remember when he was just born, you know, and those are the kind of lifelong friendships that we have. You know, we wish that, you know, we could have been even closer to them, but they did their part in pursuing us, and we were so thrilled, and we took a good lesson from them. You know, we really learned culturally that beyond being just teachable in the culture, which kind of is a passive thing. If you think about it, you know, everyone wants to be a teachable person, right? When you're hiring an employee or when you're hiring or when you're looking for someone to, you know, be a student in your class, you want a teachable person. And that's a fantastic quality. But we learned overseas that something, you need something beyond being teachable. And we really thought that that is being a learner, which is a proactive thing. If you're going to be a learner, you really have to go after the information you want to learn, because being a learner means that you're really abandoning your own need for authority in the situation. You're admitting that you don't know things, and that's hard for many of us. You're admitting that you can't achieve something on your own, and being a learner really pays great dividends because of all of the things that you do learn. Whether it be culturally or educationally or emotionally as well. And we were thrilled to be able to learn so many different things. We felt like our perspectives were broadened. Our empathy for other people was deepened so much when we chose to learn about others. We were able to minister more effectively to people once we took time to learn about them. We learned the big lesson that cultures can be different. They don't have to be right and wrong, which was such a blessing for us when we learned that. Because I tell you, when we stepped into India, we sure thought there were a lot of things wrong about it. But over time, we realized, no, it's not just right and wrong. It's not an issue of one thing or the other. There can be a both and things are just different, and we can appreciate how they're different.
As you went through sort of that arc of, we're coming and we're going to make a difference.
Yes.
And then you get there and it's like, oh, we've got a lot to learn.
Yeah.
What was your relationship with God like through that time? And you come out of all this history of ministering and just so much that was feeding you. And then you're walking through something pretty tough.
Right.
What was that like?
Yeah. We had to deal with a new type of relationship with God, because our safe, certain, predictable relationship with God was very easy in our lifetime up until then. Now, we were very young when we went. I was only 23 when I went to India, and we hadn't had a lot of life experience up until that point, but we'd had some. But it was all very within our comfort zone. And going to India taught us that we had to trust God in new ways, and that we weren't always going to be able to figure God out. We were going to have to deal with a lot of uncertainty, and God was going to require that we embraced that uncertainty.
Oh, so not just tolerate it, but
actually
welcome it.
That's right. Actually welcome the uncertainty. And I think here in our own culture, you're right. We tolerate uncertainty. We don't like it. We know it has to happen.
We minimize it if we can.
Absolutely. That's right. But in India, we learn to embrace uncertainty. I can remember, and this is a very simple story, but we partnered with some schools in India for some lower class children and giving them an equal opportunity to learn in a high quality classroom. We would bring over some other, you know, American teachers who would want to come and teach in those classrooms. And lo and behold, they would go to class one day and the whole school would be shut down. And there had been no notice that this was a day off. And we would get a hold of the other teachers and they'd be like, oh, yeah, it was a government holiday today. Yeah, there's no school. And so, okay, that happens once. That's not a problem. They just forgot to tell the teachers and that was okay. Well, it would happen again maybe the next month and maybe again the next month. And the American teachers did not like this at all because, you know,
they messing with the plan.
Absolutely. They just did not know what to expect. And so this whole new level of ambiguity and uncertainty was happening. And we as Americans thought, wow, this is wrong. This is not the way that you run a school.
We need to fix this.
We need to fix it. Absolutely. That's right. But it was perfectly acceptable in that culture. In fact, it was welcomed because, hey, we get a day off. We don't get very many days off, so let's welcome this holiday. And, you know, it's okay if we don't tell everybody. You know, that's not a value. Communication, good in parenthesis, in quotation marks, is not a value. And so, yes, leaning into this uncertainty of life was an important thing. And what we learned was that leaning into that uncertainty and really embracing it is something that breeds resilience in life. Because if you can really embrace it, then it doesn't bother you as much. That uncertainty doesn't control you. The need for certainty doesn't become an idol in your life. You can just let it roll off your back. You can let something else, you know, be something that controls you. Maybe like the trust of the Lord, that God has something else in plan for you.
This sounds like the whole thing was building your trust muscle in a really big way.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's played a very big role in how we live in the U.S. today. You know, we've been back for about 5 years now, and I can see a huge difference in the way that I live my life today. We came back to the U.S. in a very uncertain manner. We were asked to leave India by the Indian government. It was not our own choice. And so that was a very traumatic event for us. And we had to see the hand of God even in that traumatic event. We had to see that the Lord knew what was going to happen, when it was going to happen, and that he had a good plan for us.
How long had you been there when this happened?
Yeah, we had been in India for 20 years.
And did you have an inkling it was coming?
Well, living in a foreign land, you always are on high alert that you may be asked to leave at any moment.
So another level of uncertainty that you live
correct.
With. That's
okay. correct. Absolutely. That's right. We always had our suitcases within reach, and we lived a very simple lifestyle so that we didn't have too much stuff to put into those suitcases and flee if we needed to.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a very different way of living. Our house was always Marie Kondo'd, if you want to put it that way. we had been there for 20 years. We knew that, you know, our time could come to an end at any time. And when we were asked to leave, it was very traumatic. And when we were back in the U.S. For about a year during that time, we lived with another level of uncertainty that we had never lived with before. And it was the uncertainty that maybe we weren't doing God's best anymore. You know, we couldn't be in India anymore. And so I guess we're not doing what God called us to do. And then one day, I don't know, maybe we were with our therapist, we realized that God had taken us out of India. You know, it wasn't a mistake that we left India. God had taken us out. We had actually always prayed that God would make it very clear to us when it was time for us to leave India. We'd seen so many people over the years struggle with the decision to leave the field, to go back to their home country. And we didn't want to have that struggle because it was a really big struggle for people. We just always prayed, Lord, please make it clear. And in the divine humor of God, you know, he ripped us out of there without any notice and without any preparation. But he knew. He knew what was going to happen, and he had a plan for us back in our own home country. And so we struggled with that for about a year, but then a switch flipped. And we realized, no, we're here in America at this time to do God's best for him at this time. And he has work for us to do that will benefit India more than if we were still in India. And that was a remarkable transformation in our lives when we realized that.
How did that come about, that realization? I mean, you talked about the conversation with your therapist, but is that where it took root?
I mean, it was a combination of things because we right now are unable to go back to India. So there's a ban.
There's not an option.
There's not an option.
Oh, wow.
And so that actually was a blessing for us because there's no wondering. You know, there's no wondering, can we go back? Will we go back tomorrow, next month, next year? Right now, there's not an option. So that was very helpful. The other thing was that the Lord showed us the different work that we could do for him here in the U.S., in our new home state of Minnesota, which we love so much. God also showed us that there were so many things in the U.S. that we could do on behalf of India. There are so many people who need to hear the story of what's going on in India so that they can be aware, so that they can get involved, so that they can resource the work in India. You know, we have some 501c3s here in the U.S. that are actively supporting the work, and people can get involved, and we're excited to work for those nonprofits here in the U.S. And every week, it seems like I'm in a different church telling the story about the ministry in India to different people, and it is such a joy to watch their eyes become wide and their faces to light up when they hear all that God is doing in India and to hear all that God is doing to expand his kingdom across that great nation. And just to see those faces, just to see those eyes become wide makes me realize that the work that I'm doing here is important, it's relevant, and it's exactly what God wants me to be doing. I think that the most important thing that I learned throughout the entire experience living in India was the concept of resilience. And I think it was a theme really throughout my entire life, from an early childhood that had to survive the divorce of my parents, through childhood and teenage years filled with sports and the winning and losing and having to recover from that, to living overseas. This whole concept of resilience, I think, is something that doesn't come easily to people. And I was so thankful that God allowed me the opportunity to really develop resilience in my life through the entire India experience. I mean, including really the call to India, the training that we had to go through, all of that cultural adaptation that we had to go through, all that time spent building relationships, even though it was so hard for me and took so much effort, all that uncertainty that we went through, both in India and then once we got back to the United States, so much uncertainty that we eventually learned to embrace, really that personal resilience, we built that. And that was something that really can never be taken away from us, even though we may never live in India again. You know, we learned that we can get through almost any tough time. I think the biggest lesson that we learned about God through the tough times was that God is always who he says he was, and he always does what he says he's going to do, and he's always the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Because there were so many times when we would be plagued by anxiety over some new situation that we would find ourselves in, and we could reflect upon the fact that God got us through situations in our past, and he's going to do the same for us today. And I think that was something that really helped to build our spiritual resilience and our emotional resilience moving forward. Because if we had not had that past experience with God to look back on and to reflect upon, there would be no foundation for us to move forward. And we were very thrilled to be able to remember that God has us in his hand, and he's going to carry us through today just like he did all those times before.
That's such a scriptural principle. I mean, God was constantly telling the people of Israel, remember what I did, remember what I did. And it's true for us too, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right.
So today, I mean, now you're in the U.S., you know, back into a culture that values punctuality and values lots of other things above relationships. You're this kind of this bicultural person, and how do you live and operate, and what do you find to be the greatest challenge now?
Yeah, I'm late to a lot of things now. my husband is still very time-oriented. He always was when we were in India as well. And he's constantly telling me, come on, we have to go. And I'll say to him, oh, don't worry. It's fine if we're a little late. So I've really, it's really integrated into my personality now. But I tell you, the biggest compliment last year, somebody that I was, I work with a lot of young moms now because, you know, my kids are grown, they're 20 and 18 now, and they need me as young adults, but they don't need me as young children need their moms. And so I work with a lot of young moms, and I mentor them, and I hang out with them. And one of these young moms said to me last year, and I almost cried because it was just the most wonderful compliment anyone could have ever given me. She said to me, Leah, you are the most relational person I've ever met. And I was flabbergasted because even 10 years ago, that was not me at all. And so I think that the lessons that I learned in India have done a remarkable transformation on who I am today. And I'm so thankful to the Lord that he showed me the mistakes or errors or, you know, flaws in my personality that could be corrected with a little bit of time, with a little bit of effort, with a little bit of reliance on the Lord to really show me the right way to go. So today I spend a lot of time listening to people. I spend a lot of time drinking coffee with people. I never turn down a coffee date, you know, just to go and hang out and sit across from someone who is hurting or someone who just needs to talk. And building those relationships is now very important to me.
I love hearing stories like Leah's because it's a reminder that the hard stuff we're going through, that can become a foundation for us to move forward. Leah's story gives me a fresh perspective on the challenges we're facing. You know, maybe that tough stuff you're walking through, which feels like it just couldn't possibly be God's plan for your life. Well, maybe it is. Maybe it's there to build our trust muscles, to build resilience, to prepare us for what's ahead. Thanks to Leah for sharing her story. If you'd like to learn more about the work she's doing with the Dignity Freedom Network, that's an organization committed to rescue, reclaim, and restore the lives of families in India, head to dfnusa.org. Leah has written a memoir about her time in India. It's called Resilient Heart, and you can find that on Amazon. Thanks to Leah for sharing her story. Well, this wraps up our 10th season of The Unfolding. We're going to take a few weeks off as we are working on our next 10 episodes, but we'll be sure to drop a fantastic story from the archives in your podcast feed each Friday. Thanks so much to the amazing team that makes this podcast possible. Danielle Perez, Elena Nallen, the incomparable producer, Jason Rakow, and our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. He's the perfect person to bring motivation and inspiration to your team. Find out how to invite Habib to speak at your event at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.